It's a delight to see you this morning and delight to have an opportunity to be here in this place with all the provisions that we have and the comforts that we enjoy. It is right for us to be thankful to God and thankful to Him for many, many things. I would like to suggest to you, not really as the lesson, but merely as a comment to begin this morning, that you be thankful to God for your families. If you consider your marriage, your relationship with your children or your parents to be good, then do not take it for granted, but work very diligently on those relationships, constantly on those relationships. Make them even better than they are, and enjoy them for as being blessing from God. But if you look at your relationship and your family as being less than ideal, then I strongly urge you to change, to make changes in yourself and encourage others in the right kind of way to make changes in themselves so that your families, your marriages, the relationship with your children and your parents can be all that the potential it has to be. Christ came to this earth, among other things, as a teacher. And He led about for 3 years or so a group of disciples, followers. Sometimes the followers were a large group, and other times only a small handful. When people today think about and talk about being Christians, when you think about being a Christian, what do you think about? What is the concept? What are the thoughts of being a Christian? To some people, I suggest that being a Christian is little more than wearing a name, and there is some pride in wearing the name of Christ. And so I'm a Christian wearing His name. But I suggest to you that that is hardly all that is involved in being a Christian. There would be some who would think of being a Christian as being, well, that you have to believe and you have to obey and you have to worship regularly and those kinds of things, you know. And they look at being a Christian as kind of a legal requirement. And meeting those legal requirements is really all there is to being a Christian. But tying these thoughts together, in Acts 11, well, you'll just have to trust me. In Acts 11 and verse 26, did you see that? It was quick, but maybe if not, turn to it. We're told that the disciples were called Christians first in Antioch. So if you want to know what a Christian is, then you learn what a disciple is. If you come to understand what a disciple is, then you come to understand what a Christian is. And as I suggested to you, Jesus came as a teacher. And He led about a group of disciples, men and women, who followed Him being His disciples. Not just wearing a name, not just meeting legal requirements, but being His disciples. And in the lesson this morning, I want to suggest to you some things that would be involved in being disciples, and therefore, things that would be involved in being Christians. In the first place, a disciple of the Lord would be one who learns from the Lord. He learns from his master. He is going about from place to place, and from time to time hearing lessons that the Master teaches. In John chapter 8, verse 31 and 32, Jesus said to those Jews who believed him, "If you abide in my word, you are my disciples indeed. You shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." Discipleship then is abiding in his word. "Then are you truly my disciples," he said. In John 6 and verses 44 and 45, Jesus says, "No one can come to me unless the Father who sent me draws him, and I will raise him up at the last day. It is written in the prophets, and they shall all be taught of God. Therefore, everyone who has heard and learned from the Father comes to me." There is a learning process that is essential if a person is to be one of God's people. There is a constant learning. It's not just, "Well, I've learned that and I've graduated." There is a need for continually growing and increasing the knowledge that you have. How many times have you had an experience where you've reread a passage, restudied a subject, and came to understand it better than you did before? Or even possibly came to change your mind as to your understanding. God is wanting us to have that kind of disposition where we are day in and day out, time after time after time, listening to the disciple, or listening to the Master as a disciple, learning from him. This idea and the thought of it comes from the old Jewish idea. The Jewish rabbi would have several disciples who would follow him about and come to school, as it were, and they would listen to his words. And they would, in fact, memorize his words, long passages at a time. They, in turn, would become teachers and have their own disciples later on, and they would teach those same words to their disciples, and it would be handed down from generation to generation. And this has become a tradition of the Jewish people, even to the present day with some. And the collection of those Jewish traditions and rabbinic instructions is pulled together in the books known as the Talmud. And that is the idea behind our being disciples, learners, students of the Lord. And if you would, for just a moment, think back and look in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and John. Any passage in those books where you find Jesus teaching, most commonly, I suppose, best known to most people would be the Sermon on the Mount. Matthew 5, 6, and 7. Jesus went into a mountain, and his disciples came to him, and he sat down and began teaching them. Imagine, if you would, for just a moment, yourself being one of those in that group. And you come, and he sits down on probably on a rock or a comfortable spot, and you find a spot too on the grass or maybe a stone, and you sit and listen as he says, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." And he continues on those Beatitudes, and then comparing his disciples, those of the kingdom, with the light of the world and the salt of the earth. And you listen as he says that your righteousness, if you are to enter the kingdom of God, must exceed the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees. And he gives examples of their teaching and their attitudes as compared with what God really says and expects of you. Imagine at another time, perhaps you're following and you're walking along the Sea of Galilee. And he's leading a large crowd of people. So many that they're pressing hard against him, and you're pushing and shoving, trying to get close because you want to hear. And And he comes to a fisherman there, Simon Peter, and he says, could I borrow your boat? And he gets in his boat and moves the boat out just a short ways from the shore, and he sits in the boat, and you find a spot there on the shore and listen while he teaches. Because you're a disciple. A disciple. A student. Someone who just feeds on his words. Every word, every syllable. Learning. Studying. Wanting to learn more. That's the first step in being a disciple. That process of learning from the Lord to know what He says. You begin with His life in the gospel accounts, but you study all of His words. Not just those of Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and John, but you'd study in the book of Acts, and then the epistles written by His disciples, His apostles, to learn, to be a student. But you'd surely agree that a disciple that really is a disciple is not just a student, but is one who learns the words and then does what the words say. He's obedient to the Master's teaching. In the verses we read a moment ago in John 8, 31 and 32, He said, "If you abide in My word, then are you truly My disciples. You will know the truth, and the truth will make you free." And then in verse 39, in the same chapter, John 8, verse 39, they answered and said to Him, "Abraham is our father." And Jesus said to them, "If you were Abraham's children, you would do the works of Abraham." Abraham's children. If you were, you'd live the way Abraham did. You'd do what Abraham did. In Matthew 7, in verse 21, Jesus says, "Not everyone who says to Me, 'Lord, Lord,' shall enter the kingdom of heaven, but he that does the will of My Father who is in heaven." It's not just a claim for our relationship, not a claim of discipleship. Lord, Lord, calling Him Lord is not the key, but the key is in doing what He says. Hebrews 5 and verses 8 and 9. Describes Jesus as the Son, and though He was the Son, yet He learned obedience by the things which He suffered. And being made perfect, He became to all those who obey Him the source or the author of eternal salvation. God never offered salvation and eternal life to those who were disobedient. What's more, He never offered salvation and eternal life to someone who would not obey, who was just indifferent in his attitude toward Him. His offer of life eternal was always to people who obeyed Him. Over and over again, the premium is put on obedience. The emphasis is on obedience. In James chapter 1, for example, beginning in verse 21, He says, "Therefore, lay aside all filthiness and overflow of wickedness, and receive with meekness the implanted word which is able to save your souls. But be doers of the word, not hearers only, deceiving yourselves. For if anyone is a hearer of the word and not a doer, he is like a man observing his natural face in a mirror, for he observes himself and goes away, and immediately forgets what kind of person he was. But he who looks into the perfect law of liberty and continues in it and is not a forgetful hearer but a doer of the work, this one will be blessed in what he does." The blessing is to the doing. Hearing, being a learner, a disciple, a student, and then as a disciple, and a student to do the words that the Master has taught. Well, then that leads to another step. being a disciple, learning, then obeying. If you're truly obedient and truly a disciple, then that requires denying yourself. In Luke chapter 14, Jesus made a hard statement to his disciples in verses 26 and 27. Luke 14, 26 and 27. If anyone comes to me and does not hate his father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, and his own life, he cannot be my disciple. And whoever does not bear his cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. As I said, that's a hard saying. That is demanding of us. You say, I want to be a disciple. I want to follow the Lord. I believe He is the Christ, the Son of God. He says, well, that's great. But that's going to mean that you pay a high price. Hate father, mother, brother, sister, wife, children. Now, God doesn't tell us that we must mistreat people and hold bitterness and resentment and animosity toward people, malice. No, that's... But He's using a word here that would describe a relative relationship, comparing one to another. If you compare how you feel and how you treat Christ as to how you feel towards and how you treat even your own relatives, those closest to you, and even your own life, then the comparison would be as love is to hate. Your allegiance and your commitment to Christ so far exceeds any other that the comparison would be as love is to hate. We're not told to mistreat or hold malice toward anyone. But we are expected, if we are disciples, we are expected to have such a commitment to God and to His Son that not even our parents, not even our husband or wife, our children, our brothers or sisters, and not even ourselves would keep us from being true disciples, from being the students and the obedient ones that we ought to be. You see, discipleship is really built around this idea, discipline. Disciple, discipline, same word. Discipline is then from the product, or is the product from the self-denial. In Matthew chapter 16, Jesus had promised to build the church. He had given Peter the promise that He would give to him the keys of the kingdom of heaven. And then after that, He began to say to His disciples, to show them that He must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things at the hands of the elders and the chief priests and the scribes. And in fact, He said He would be killed and raised again the third day. Now, that's a price He was willing to pay, because there was something more important than just the life that He lived. There was a goal. There was an objective that was worth dying for. And it was that church about which He had promised just prior to this. But Peter didn't understand that at the time, and he took him, began to rebuke him, saying, "Be it far from you, Lord. This shall not happen to you." But he turned and said to Peter, "Get behind me, Satan. You are an offense to me, For you're not mindful of the things of God, but the things of men. Now, Peter was a great man. But he was not a great man at this time. He was not behaving in a manner that was a true disciple. He wanted to learn. He had just confessed, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God," when other people were saying other things about Jesus. They were not derogatory things, but they were less than ideal. And Peter was willing to stand for all that he was. "You're the Christ, the Son of God." But there's so much to learn. So much to understand. And just the simple fact of sacrifice. Just the simple idea that I must die and be raised in order to accomplish my purposes was beyond the comprehension and thinking of Peter at this time. And so, he said, "It will not happen. This shall not happen to you." And Jesus says, "You are an offense. You are a stumbling block because your mind is set on the things of men, not the things of God." And then Jesus said to his disciples, all of them who were following, "If anyone desires to come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. For whoever desires to save his life will lose it. And whoever loses his life for my sake shall find it." There is so much built into those words. When he had just been talking about he would be suffering, and he would be killed and raised again, he then tells his disciples the price of discipleship is self-denial. Take up your cross. People take up crosses now as jewelry. They wear a cross on a chain around the neck, maybe a lapel pin or maybe a bumper sticker. All kinds of crosses. But usually they're symbols of something. And that's not what Jesus meant. He says, "Deny yourself and take up your cross," meaning go to your death. Be willing to die in the same way that I have said I must die. You be willing to die. If you wish to save your life, you're going to lose it. But if you're willing to lose your life for my sake, you will find it. A disciple learns that the cost of self-denial, as essential as it is for discipleship, is the only way to come out victorious. Obedience that is convenient is not obedience at all. But obedience that comes from commitment, and obedience that would pay the price, that would go even beyond what my inclinations and feelings are for, because I'm committed to the Master, committed to Him and His teaching and His Word, knowing that that's the best, I'm willing to die that I might live. That attitude is the victory. And finally, a true disciple, a Christian, will be such as one who is so closely tied to the Master that he would also bear fruit for the Master. In John 15, and verse 8, Jesus says, "By this my Father is glorified, that you bear much fruit, and so you will be my disciples." This is discipleship, bearing fruit. But if you look in this context, back to verse 4 and 5, he says, "Abide in me and I in you. As the branch cannot bear fruit of itself unless it abides in the vine, neither can you unless you abide in me. I am the vine, you are the branches. He who abides in me and I in him bears much fruit. For without me you can do nothing." One of the most difficult lessons to learn as a Christian is not just the fact that I have an obligation. Obligation to teach others and try to lead them to Christ. Obligation to produce fruit in myself of such as is called the fruit of the Spirit in Galatians 5 of love and joy and peace and patience and so on. It's not just that I know I'm obligated to bear fruit. But what's so difficult to learn is that I really can bear fruit. More than I realize I can. More than I realize the potential that I have. And I think it's true for all of us that our potential is phenomenal. Not because we're such great branches, but because we're tied to the vine. And if we abide in Him, and He in us, we can bear fruit, and we must. He goes on to say, if you do not bear fruit, you're cut off and cast aside and withered and burned. You must bear fruit. It's not an optional thing. It's not something you can leave to others. Discipleship demands it. But what we must learn is that the potential is there. The victory is already won. The growth, the fruit is already at our disposal. If we just use the vitality and the life source of Christ Himself. Don't rely on your own wisdom. And don't rely on your own strength, your own abilities. But rely on the abilities and the strengths and the wisdom of God and Christ. And truly trust that. And truly then get busy about the work that you need to do for Him, and your produce will be far more than you even imagined it could be. It's something we need. It's something that we need to work and constantly remind ourselves of as a need to have the confidence, to have the assurance, to have the trust in the Master that we would really bear fruit for Him. So, what is a Christian? The disciples were called Christians, first in the city of Antioch. After the book of Acts, the word disciple, as I recall, is not used again, but it's used about 260 times through Acts, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, and Acts. The word Christian is used 3 times in the New Testament. It's not just a name, it's a relationship. And a relationship that's built upon what it means to be a disciple. And if you're not one, you're missing something. If you're not tied to that Master, that Teacher, and if you're not sitting at His feet learning and then going about in your life doing what He says, and if you haven't learned to sacrifice and deny yourself, then you're losing life that you could gain by having learned that lesson. If you're not a Christian this morning, you need to consider again your life and what your life can be and what your life ought to be not through your doing, but through the power of God and His Son. If you will take this opportunity and give up your will, break that, and surrender it to His will, then you may become what you were intended to be when you were created in His image. Won't you come and obey Him while we stand in